And welcome to the halfguarded.com Power Hour. I'm your host, Zachary. I got nothing this week. Gilbert, and is my host, Dan Ford.
Zachary Transylvania Gilbert.
Ooh, kind of spooky. All right.
Yeah, spoopy. Spoopy, as the kids say.
We are post-Halloween. How was your Halloween, Dan?
It was great. Yeah, the trick-or-treaters came, and because I'm an adult and a serious one at that, I gave them candy.
What'd you go with there?
Is my joy, giving the youngins candy.
What kind of candy?
Obviously the best Twix, like the fun, like the full. I don't want to ape Joe Gagne, but like yeah, there's something about when you finally have enough money in life, and I'm not trying to brag here, okay? But like when you're finally enough of an adult that you're like, you know what, goddammit, I'm gonna spend like $100 on candy and get like full size bars and just fucking hand them out. To like anybody, come on, young.
Is that what you did?
Yeah,
full size. Wow,
full size.
Yeah, I had no trick or treaters, which is good because I ate all the candy last week. So I had plenty of beer to hand out, though.
You can't. That's a crime.
What if I gave it to the parents?
I still feel like there's that feels wrong. Something about that doesn't feel right.
Like, what if I gave the parents something, but the kids get nothing? It's like, here you go for being a good parent.
This is the trick. Like, you gotta watch me give something to your parents that you don't get.
Happy Halloween. Sure. But speaking of Halloween,
happy Halloween.
Kind of a spooky little story in Oklahoma City. Met a world peace, stayed at a haunted hotel, and said he was molested by a ghost.
that reminds me of my favorite episode of Unsolved Mysteries. Well, it was like a family living in a haunted house, but it was like they were cool with the ghost. And it was like they described it as a bisexual female ghost because every now and they my favorite thing was that they reasoned the family living in this ghost house was that, well, you know, she's been dead a long time, judging by the clothes she wears. So I guess like once you ain't had any for a while, you don't really care where you get the action from as a ghost.
There you go.
So they would all just get like molested in the showers. It's just like, well, you know, she didn't mess with our kids, so that, you know, as long as she's just messing with us adults, it was fine.
Yeah,
you know,
it's
added
nice
a little spice to our relationship.
It's nice to get touched every once in a while.
Sure.
You know. So but Metta World Peace was not a big fan. He was quoted as saying, "The ghosts are all over me. I just accepted it. They touched me all over the place. I'm taking one of the ghosts to court for touching me in the wrong places."
Yowza.
So this got me thinking, though, and I looked up some famous sports ghosts. How can we tie in, you know, a little post-Halloween?
All Hallows Eve.
Yes. Action. And here's one example of a sports ghost I found. Eddie Plank.
Tell me about Eddie.
Eddie Plank was a pitcher. Ended his career in 1917, 300-plus victories, less than 200 losses. Solid little picture.
Did he die?
Passed away
one
in 1926.
Oh, okay, 26.
Yeah, yeah. In 1996, though, he apparently got the urge to pitch again in the middle of the night. The owner of the house where Plank died heard a repetitive series of noises. A man would grunt, then there would be a thud, and the sound of footsteps. Apparently, Plank was launching pitches to a catcher who would occasionally have to chase down an errant toss. The owner determined that not only must the noise have come from Plank's ghost, but that the ball was traveling 60 feet, 6 inches, exactly the distance from the pitcher's mound to home plate.
Sure.
The noise has stopped within a month of the first pitch, so there you go.
That reminds me of, what does that remind me of? My mind went blank. But, yeah, that reminds me of Old Hoss Radburn, the greatest Twitter account, or well, it used to be the best Twitter account about baseball, a ghost. The ghost of Old Hoss Radburn is one of the best Twitter followers you can have for baseball-related activity.
There you go. And, so sports ghost. You ever had any encounters with a sports ghost, Dan?
Well, not personally, but I feel like everybody in Detroit is still dealing with the ghost of Bobby Lane. Like, making sure their team is never any good ever again.
Yeah.
Famously, Bobby Lane, who was, he always used to get compared to Brett Favre when Brett Favre was around because, like, he got drunk all the time and he didn't really pay attention to what the defense was doing, but he really threw it hard.
Yeah. But,
he
Brett
got,
Favre.
Yeah, he got traded from Detroit because they were tired of him showing up to all of his games drunk. And he famously decreed, "You will never win another game. You will never win another championship for 50 years." And then on the 50-year anniversary of that was the year Detroit went 0-16.
Ooh.
And so people just like, well, the ghost of Bobby Lane ain't done fucking with us no more. Like, he's still out to get us.
So some pretty spooky stuff. But another spooky thing came out this week. And that was the college football playoff rankings.
Jesus. So scary.
And if, yeah.
Especially and that number 11 team. That's real scary.
But kind of shocking. Number one, Alabama, Clemson. I think we thought they would be 1 and 2. Michigan, yep. 3. Pretty obvious. But yep. 4. Texas A&M?
Jesus.
Over Washington?
Over Washington? Louisville? Over Louisville? You know what? Ohio State might have a better argument than Texas A&M. If we're really, I mean,
yeah.
And Texas and Ohio State ain't been very good. But
no, but A&M had to go to 2 overtime, you know, to beat UCLA and Tennessee.
Ooh, those are not yeah. those are not looking like quality games at this point. Those looked a lot better no. at the time they happened.
And kind of before we get into the playoffs, let's kind of jump back to last week with Tennessee real quick.
Oh boy.
What? Because we kind of thought Tennessee might. Beginning of the year, you'd think they would have been in this top 10 list, probably.
Sure.
And lost to South Carolina last week. Starting running back is transferring to play another position. What what the hell's wrong with Tennessee?
Yeah, there's and if you keep your ear to the scuttlebutt, you know, if you put your ear to the ground, there's rumors of some major bad shit happening at Tennessee behind the scenes, as far as like locker room was revolt. There was rumors that like Jalen Hurd was just one of the dudes that like at least 5 other players quit the team. There's rumors that there was a players only meeting and that's when all those guys quit, including Jalen Hurd. It's bad. It's real bad. Shit has gone real sideways on Tennessee. And look, the rest of their schedule is easy because it's that patented the end of, you know, Tennessee will always play like Vanderbilt, Kentucky. You know, an FCS team, and this year it's Missouri. So they are pretty likely to go 4-0 the rest of the season and finish 9-3. And we're going to go, oh, 9-3, that's not so bad. But then we're going to look back on that and go, oh, God, you went 9-3 in a season in which Kentucky was briefly number 2 in the East. Like, what the fuck is wrong with, like, how did you not, you know... Butch Jones is starting to get a bit of like coaching hot seat talk, and I think inevitably he's going to get compared to Charlie Strong because Charlie Strong has had issues at Texas. But like Charlie Strong at Texas took over one of the hardest jobs in America because he was taking over a blue blood program where the fan base didn't necessarily realize how bad their team had gotten.
Hey, I don't think that's super fair to Tennessee. Was not a good program to take over.
Well, this is my argument. Tennessee wasn't in good shape, but the difference between Texas and Tennessee is the Tennessee fans knew they weren't. They were not looking for him to immediately be in national championship. He's had plenty of rope, and he's just set that rope on fire.
Yeah,
all those close losses where it's like
expectations too high, I think.
Dubious in-game decisions where it's like, all right, I don't need to be like a genius football guy to know that like kicking a field goal from the 1 yard line is kind of stupid. You know, if you've got a talent advantage over somebody, like really, if you're kicking a field goal from the 1 yard line, that's kind of dumb no matter what the context is.
Yeah.
It's the 1 yard line. Punch it in, bucko. You know, hiring just, I don't know where the hell he found his offensive coordinator. Like he hired an offensive coordinator that had not been in football in like 6 years.
This is a guy. Like, yeah. Pointed this. Yeah. You pointed this out to me pre-show. It's a guy who didn't know that teams sometimes don't do what they do on film in a game.
Yeah. Yeah, he was like, he was stunned. He was just like, well, you know, the difference in football these days is sometimes they do different things in the game than they showed on film. And it's like, what? This is stunning to you? I mean, it's just, they don't have a quarterback's coach on this team. Like, there's nobody on this team who's a dedicated quarterback's coach. Their offensive coordinator is a former offensive line coach. Like, the closest thing to a quarterback's coach they have is a former Michigan quarterback who's working as a grad assistant. I mean, this is, it's just, they've done so much weird stuff. Butch Jones spends so much time, like, telling the media, the local media, how to do their job. And it just, He's mismanaged the locker room. It just makes you go, man, Butch Jones was not ready for this kind of job. Like this.
Yeah.
Everything about him screams mid-major. And it's not that he doesn't understand football. It's just like, this guy's not ready for a premier job. And he probably never will be.
No. Like some, I mean, guys are
just cut, some guys are just cut out to coach at, you know, Memphis, not Tennessee.
And this was a good, not a great situation to fall into, but one like where you said, the fan base is ready to be patient.
Yeah.
Because they knew how bad the program was.
If you're going to take over a blue blood program, you either want to take it over when it's still been good and it's like, all right, yeah, they're still at a peak. I don't have to rebuild anything. Or you want to take that job when it's been bad enough that people are going to give you rope to fix it.
Yeah, like think about Saban in Alabama.
Right.
You know,
yeah, that was another perfect example. Saban got to Alabama and Alabama people were ready to go, whatever you need, Nick. You tell us what you want to do because we just hired a Shula boy who screwed up our team. So whatever you want us to do, we'll do it. If you want us to run naked through glass, fine. We'll all do that for you.
Yeah, it's a chance to really push your stamp on the program and have total control. And like you said, Butch Jones has fumbled this with bad coaching hires, not the best media relations, and poor handling of the locker room, it looks like.
Yeah.
Which is death.
And I just, I don't know how you go forward when you've got this kind of stuff happening.
Yeah. Like, so, I mean, how many, does he get it? How many more seasons does Jones last?
One? Next year is do or die. And the way this shit is breaking, if they go six and, like, if they lose to Vanderbilt and they lose to Kentucky, and this stuff keeps getting worse, like this off the field stuff, he might be out of town. I would put his chances of getting fired this year at non-zero. I'm not saying he's likely to get fired, but he's got a shot at getting fired now.
Yeah, like, if the dominoes fall a certain way, Jones might.
He has Brian Kelly'd himself. He went from a situation where there was no, like, he had 100% chance he wouldn't get fired to, there's a shot now. Like, it's not a guarantee.
But let's play a fun little game here. Let's say Jones does get fired. Who do you want that tennis? Do you want to take that program over? Because I think it's pretty fixable, the good coach.
Yeah, because he has upgraded the talent, and the SEC East is so terrible. Like, the SB Nation does their yearly statistical rank of the divisions, and it looks like they're on pace to be the worst division in college, the worst Power 5 division in college football for the second straight year. Like, I don't care how bad things have been at Tennessee. If you're an ambitious coach and you've got an opportunity to be at a blue blood program where all the other blue bloods in your division are terrible, you're taking it.
Yeah.
Like Georgia is, like, obviously a big time recruiting power in that conference, in that division. And Georgia is a fucking disaster. Like, that is one of the worst teams in the country.
I mean, and Georgia, we'll shoehorn this in real quick, because Georgia even had player complaint. You had Chubb and some other running backs from Georgia complaining about not getting used.
Yeah.
Last week, when you have one of the best running backs in the division, you're not even using him.
Yep.
If and not historic, the best.
And historically, when you look at what was the modern peak of the Tennessee Volunteers program, it was when Georgia was in the shitter. So, you look at, you know, when you look at Tennessee, I don't know if Butch Jones is the guy to do it. I think that's the other reason why you might make the move a little prematurely, because it's like, if we can get the right guy into this thing, we could get really good. But I don't know if Butch Jones is the guy to do it.
You probably can't do it because he's going to get fired this year. But maybe you don't fire Jones this year, more than likely. Are you kind of looking at Charlie Strong if you're Tennessee?
Yeah, Charlie Strong would do really well at Tennessee.
I'd be eyeing Charlie Strong right now. I like hard across the room. Like, hey, when your wife leaves you, give me a call.
Charlie had a great quote going into the Baylor game where he was just like, I don't know who's going to be coaching this team next year, but they're going to win 10 games, which is just confident as hell.
Yeah.
And he's right.
Yeah. And it's the guy who I think it, yeah.
That team is loaded with really good young talent, and they're just all sophomores.
Yeah. So, let's jump back into to the playoffs.
Sure.
So Washington, like, kind of, I think a lot of the fan base maybe thought this would happen, but
yeah,
you got to start wondering if maybe this is maybe an advantage for Washington. They're playing with a chip on their shoulder.
Yeah.
They're kind of less likely to blow some of these games coming.
Yeah, well, I get the concept of saying, well, Washington, even though they're undefeated, I don't know if they're really the number four team in the nation, because a lot of their schedule, and it's not their fault.
Yeah.
Like, I'm not it's not Washington's fault their schedule is lackluster. When they signed up to play Rutgers, Rutgers was like a halfway decent team.
Yeah.
And then this year rolled around and Rutgers is one of the biggest disasters in college football. But they didn't know that when they scheduled them. And, you know, Stanford has been a top 10 program the last few years. Oregon's been a top 10 program. And it's just this year, those programs are both just irredeemable dog feces.
Yeah. And that's not a knock on Washington, because I think you can plug Washington into a few different conferences and maybe they're not undefeated, but they're in the top
three.
They're
in the mix. And Stanford's bad and Oregon's bad, and they killed them. They did exactly what you should do when you play a bad team. So I still think Washington's really good. It's just I get punishing them for the schedule, which, again, it's not their fault. I think the bottom line is that if they just keep winning, they'll be in it.
Yeah.
You know? But I think this does send the message. It's like, if you guys don't win out, like, you're not guaranteed a spot.
Yeah, but if I'm a Huskies fan, this plays in your favor. Because this team's going to stay a lot more focused now. They're not really going to coast their way. And then once they get in the playoffs, you're kind of playing with that, we're not supposed to be here, so who cares, kind of attitude. So that's always kind of dangerous.
I just think Chris Peterson's such a good coach that it's like,
yeah,
none of this stuff's going to – nothing this that anybody can do is going to screw with what they're trying to do. Like, he's just too good at what he does.
But looking a little down the line, kind of shocked Louisville.
Yeah, I mean,
Ohio State, really?
If you told me that there was a one loss team at four, I would have said Louisville, not Texas A&M.
Yeah,
but I feel like, and this is the conspiracy theorist in me, feel like the reason why Louisville's not number four and Texas A&M is that if Louisville was number four, you'd really have no way not to have Clemson number one. I mean, yeah. Realistically, if Clemson had beat the number four team in the nation and the number nine team in the nation, there's no way for them to not be number one. And they just wanted Alabama number one because their eyes are saying, like, the eye test says Alabama's better, but the resume test says it's Clemson. So you goose Alabama's resume a little bit by overrating their best win.
Yeah, I think I'm just not sure why you would put A&M at four. I can't think of, like, a logical reason, because Louisville's looked better all year. Yeah. Like, Louisville has struggled, though, against some teams.
Well, Louisville, I think one of the things that hurt Louisville is, like, literally the game before the ratings came out, they fucked around with Virginia and almost lost.
Yeah.
So, like, that's a recency bias.
Wasn't there a Duke game?
They did have a lackluster game against Duke, although they did put that game away at the end. The Virginia game, like, they had to score with, like, a minute left. Like, that was, they were losing with a minute left in the game and scored the go-ahead touchdown with, like, 20 seconds left. So that was a lot closer to being an upset than the Duke game was. Although Duke did play them close. So they have had a couple, you know, they have had those two lackluster games.
And then kind of rounding off things, we're starting to get some two-loss teams. Wisconsin, Auburn, are these the two best two-loss teams in the nation?
I would say, yeah, especially Wisconsin, and Auburn is earning their way into that too. It's just Auburn's a team that's gotten better every week. And so the Auburn in like week one, they weren't, I don't know how good they were. I mean, and that obviously that might play into why Clemson's number two, is that the team that Clemson beat is not the same team that is not the same Auburn team in, you know, week 10.
Yeah. I think Clemson plays Auburn again. I think Clemson still wins, but I think it's closer than the game looked, and it was a pretty close game.
Yeah.
I mean, it was a lot closer.
It was a game where, like, Auburn just relied entirely on their defense and offensively just tried not to screw their defense up.
Yeah.
I think their offense could maybe get a little bit more going in, you know, if they played in week 11.
And then we're rounding out things with Nebraska sitting behind.
Not sure about that one. Not sure about Nebraska, but then again, they do have Florida at number 11, and yeah, Nebraska's better than Florida at least. So,
yeah.
I mean, I just think Penn State's better than both of those teams by a lot. So yeah, I'm not sure why.
Can't have Penn State in the top.
I mean, I think they're a deserving top 10 team. Especially if Nebraska and Florida are 10 and 11, yeah. Yeah, Penn State's 10.
If you want to support, you know.
I'm supporting James Franklin. I'm supporting James Franklin.
Child rape. Yeah. People forget
Franklin,
that. Penn State.
James Franklin never hurt nobody.
Penn State covered up, was it 40 years of child abuse?
Look, James Franklin was not involved in that situation. He was.
But the fan base was.
Look, I'm not saying Penn State fans deserve to be happy. I'm just saying James Franklin does.
But looking forward,
successful at Vanderbilt. People forget
looking
that.
Looking forward, who's the top four a month from now? Regular season's winding up, or it's pretty much over. Who you got?
Who's going to the playoffs? If we're going a month from now, the team I feel most confident about is obviously the team I stand for harder than any, and that's Michigan. Mm-hmm. Michigan is the team I'm most sure, and part of that is just that their toughest games have been played, other than Ohio State. But like they're going to go to Ohio State undefeated, and I think they're better than Ohio State, so I think they'll win that game. But that
brings up something. What happens when Wisconsin plays Michigan or Ohio State?
Well, they've already played them.
No, they play them in the Big Ten Championship.
I mean, they beat them the first time. I don't see how Wisconsin.
It's hard
does
to beat a
second.
Team. That's
but Michigan's
hard
gotten
to beat a
better
team
offense. Choice. Michigan's gotten better offensively every week.
Wisconsin's getting hot.
Wisconsin's realistically it's the same team now that it was the first time they played Michigan, and Michigan keeps getting better. I mean, part of the reason why Michigan is going to be if you're asking me now to pick who I think wins the title, I'm saying Michigan. And my reasoning is that Michigan's defense came into the year awesome. They've continued to play awesome, and their offense is getting better every week because that's what Jim Harbaugh teams do. You know, Jim Harbaugh is a really good offensive coach. If you give him enough time, he'll get that offense right. And they already have a great defense. And, you know, a few weeks ago I said, well, I would still pick Alabama over Michigan because Alabama's got a better offense. I don't think so now. I think Michigan's a better team today.
Right. But you've got Michigan.
Yeah, I would say Michigan.
Who else?
And I still feel shaky about Clemson. So I'm not sure they'll make it. I got a feeling they could still lose to a coastal champion. Like something like they almost lost to Carolina. Well, not almost. I don't want to overplay it. But Carolina came close to beating them last year. In the championship game, and I don't know, something about this Clemson team, they're just rickety enough that I could see them dropping a game. So I would put my money on Michigan and Washington being there in the top four, and after that, I'm not so sure.
So we're
not sure about Alabama. I don't think
Alabama
is going to beat both Auburn and LSU. One of those teams.
I've got a bold prediction. I don't think Alabama goes to the playoffs, and I don't think the SEC will have a team in the playoffs.
Oh, man.
Because I think Auburn or LSU, two losses, will sit outside.
You don't think a two-loss SEC champion will get in?
Not if Louisville and Clemson have one loss.
Well, I mean, okay, Michigan gets in as an undefeated.
Mm-hmm.
So then you have Louisville with one loss or Clemson with one loss. Well, if it's one loss, then it's going to be Clemson.
Yeah. And then Louisville gets in.
Well, I don't think Louisville will get in over an SEC champion Auburn or an SEC champion LSU or an SEC champion,
or an SEC champion Texas A&M.
Yeah, I think
if Auburn beats Alabama, yeah.
Yeah, all those teams I think get in over a non-champion Louisville.
Okay, what happens in this scenario? Michigan loses to Ohio State. Ohio State loses to Wisconsin in the Big Ten. Does the Big Ten get a team? Does Wisconsin go in? Do you put a one-loss Michigan in?
It depends on how. Win? Okay, tell me how that loss happens. What's the game like?
Ohio State. Michigan blows a 20-point lead in the second half, but loses by 30.
Loses by 30? No, then you're not getting in.
They just collapse. Michigan just like they have it, and like they just like lose it.
I think Wisconsin makes it in. I don't think it's going to be impossible for a two-loss team to make it in if you've got a conference championship.
Yeah, I think the conference championship is the big thing. I don't know if I could justify putting Louisville in over Auburn or LSU, though. I mean, I don't know if I could justify. Yeah, I don't know if I could justify.
If shit
not
gets
real,
if shit gets real weird, I would not count out Oklahoma. I think we've put the. I think we have put the nail in the Big 12's coffin before it's ready.
And then. I mean, what if, God forbid, Florida somehow wins out and then wins the SEC?
They won't.
Championship.
Okay, that's the one thing that's not going to happen.
Let's say just Florida stumbles in.
But it won't. That won't happen.
Let's say anything can happen.
I can't, no, I do not have the capacity for fantastical thinking to comprehend something so weird.
I think you just jinxed Florida going to the playoffs. I think it's going to happen though.
I don't, I just, it's said not.
It can't, it will. Yeah.
Their offense isn't very good and their defense is overrated based on just bad SEC East team. Like they're terrible. They're a bad team. And look, we all know Kentucky's going to end up winning the SEC East anyway.
I think that's what, don't we all kind of want Kentucky to win the SEC East?
Yeah, because they're trash, yeah. And it would be the funniest. That would be the funniest thing, because it would just, like, imagine Kentucky playing Alabama in Atlanta. Like, that game's over in the first quarter.
What if Kentucky somehow wins the SEC? Do we just shut down the SEC? Is that it?
That would be the funniest possible thing.
Yeah.
Yeah. Death penalty.
Like, Kentucky plays LSU and, like, backdoors their way.
I can tell you if that happened, like, that commercial with, like, the Tanya Tucker-looking woman who just, like, SEC, it just means more. Like, that commercial will be destroyed. Every copy of it will be erased from the internet. And then that actress probably will be shot out of a cannon into the sun.
And then I think the whole Kentucky team assassinated.
Sure.
Like, they come back, the champagne, it's got, like, you know, rat poison in it. And you just see, like, a guy with an SEC hat, like, kind of walk out of the locker
room. Sure.
Whole team's dead.
Like the guy, from the Untouchables.
Yes.
Who just, like, is always, like, straightening his tie as he walks out of some horrific murder scene.
And that's... but for my playoff teams, I like Michigan, I think.
You think? You're finally willing to listen to reason.
I just don't like... I don't like Jim Harbaugh, and I don't want to see him succeed.
How can you not like Jim Harbaugh?
A, I don't respect coaches who leave the NFL to go back to college.
I respect coaches who tell the NFL to go fuck themselves.
Oh, yeah, to go fuck themselves and take advantage of slave labor, basically. So that's
you know what? If it means not having to work for an NFL owner, yeah.
Yeah, and then taking a bunch of money in Michigan, a bunch of state money.
Okay, it's not state money. You know better than anybody. You don't get paid with taxpayer dollars in a major program.
That money could still go towards Flint.
No, it wouldn't.
So there you go, Jim Harbaugh. We're gonna have more.
He gets paid from donations that wouldn't happen if he wasn't the coach.
Well, maybe they could donate to something better.
They wouldn't.
So I think the more Michigan wins, the more people die in Flint. So there you go. So I'm not rooting for Michigan.
Anything that makes Jed York unhappy, good. Because Jed York's a moron, and Jim Harbaugh would happily still be at San Francisco if Jed York wasn't a fucking idiot.
If he didn't want to,
and if Trent Baalke wasn't a dipshit. Like, he got run off after being one of the most successful coaches in the NFL because the owner didn't get. He didn't. We weren't nice to the owner. He didn't kiss the owner's ass enough, so we fired him.
Well, you probably should.
Anything that exposes how ridiculous the NFL has become and how the owners of that league have run that sport into the ground. They have killed the Golden Goose. Their ratings are down 25% because the owners have legislated common sense out of that league. And Jim Harbaugh, I think for a lot of people, was one of the moments where it's like, wait, we've run this guy off from the NFL? Why? Because of personality conflicts with a GM? That's stupid. I think he is a data point in the NFL alienating itself from the American public.
Regardless, I have Michigan, Wisconsin, or Ohio State in the playoffs. One of those three.
Yeah, I agree.
I'm going to go this. I'm going to say Michigan. No, you know, fuck that. I'm going to say Ohio State, Clemson, Louisville, Washington. No SEC team makes it.
Wow. Bold. Yeah. So bold. You're the boldest.
Yeah, and I think that's going to be right, so...
Clay Travis somewhere just started crying, and he doesn't know why.
That's the goal of this podcast, by the way. It's to make Clay Travis cry.
Sure.
We will. If we could make Clay Travis cry, we will shut down this podcast. That'll be the last episode.
All we got to do is walk up to him and burn a Confederate flag, and then, like, yeah. You know.
Or show him like an interracial couple.
My grandpappy!
Or have one of his kids marry a black person.
Oh, no.
That actually might be the new goal of this spot.
Yeah, we're going to arrange this.
Yeah, Clay Travis's daughter marries a black guy. Well,
a lifelong dream I never knew I had until now.
All right, but you mentioned the NFL, and it's NFL Roundup this week, West Coast West. We're going to discuss the return of Jay Cutler. I've got a pretty interesting little strategy for the Eagles taking on the Giants this week, and we got some more stuff, so check it out. It's a fun-size edition. Or actually not fun-sized. It's a regular share size. Edition. Yeah, it's a little bit bigger. But all right, but let's check that out now. And welcome to the NFL Roundup. I'm Zachary T. Gilbert. This is my guest this week, West Coast Wes.
Let me just do this really quickly. Let me sound the siren. That's the Jay Cutler siren. We're sounding it this week because Jay Cutler's back and he's taken down the top team in the NFC, the Minnesota Vikings. Did you get a chance on Halloween night to watch the Renaissance? The revitalization of the Chicago Bears, yes. And what did you think?
You cannot miss primetime Cutler. No. And he delivered. I mean, it's kind of funny after all this talk of the Bears last week of, really planning to rebuild, everyone's position's up, John Fox is probably gone, that they go and win a game to make sure they can get, like, a top five pick. Probably. So that would be classic Bears right there to ensure that you get, like, a ninth or tenth pick. Instead of like a top five because you beat Minnesota on Monday night.
Yeah, doing yourself harm in the long run, but it was nice to see at least. And on the flip side, you have to be a little bit worried about Minnesota. We've been very pro Minnesota on this podcast, but now it's all up in the air, it seems. And I don't know what to think. I think we have a new favorite in the NFC. And
I think we do, but to talk about Minnesota real quick, the offensive line has just been ravaged by injuries. And this is a team that had to bring a guy out of retirement to come play for him, and Chris Long. It's just in bad shape, and Bradford's not the QB who can make things work behind a weak O-line. We've seen that his entire career, basically. So I think they're in big trouble. They can't get some guys back for, maybe a postseason run. They're not going to do too well. At this point, they might not even win their division.
Yeah, once again, we get the bad Sam Bradford, the one that can't make it happen because he really can't make it happen. What he can do is allow it to happen, and that's all right if your offensive line is playing well and you're threatening in a variety of ways. But if he's forced into action and has no time to react, he's on the ground more often than not. And on the flip side, if you're the Vikings defense and you can't handle the Chicago Bears, as good as Jay Cutler is, one of the best quarterbacks in the history of the game, if you can't handle him in his return game where things should be and did at times look quite rusty with the Bears, then Soldier Field and all, I don't know what to tell you. And you're right now with Detroit nipping at their heels and, of course, the Green Bay Packers, who will never die, right behind them, things start to get a little – you have to be nervous if you're in Minneapolis right now.
If you're Minnesota, you want to right the ship. I don't think – today was the trade deadline. I don't think they made any moves for a lineman. So we'll see. But this is – like, they're playing Detroit this week. We'll talk about it later, but that's one I'm really interested in. Because that one could shift the whole balance of how the NFC North is going to work. Yeah, so that's an interesting game.
Detroit at 4-4 needs a win and can't afford to lose at this point. I mean, they can, obviously, but you're making it awfully difficult on yourself as we get into the second half of the season. So I'm with you. That'll be one to watch.
Yeah, but, past couple of weeks, we have been complaining about poor play in the NFL, and Monday night wasn't so hot, but still interesting, great storylines. And we had a great Sunday. We started off with a tie, not the best, but after that, kind of a lot of fun. We had some overtime games. We had a last-minute attempt at a touchdown in New Orleans with Seattle, New Orleans. Green Bay, Atlanta was a great back-and-forth game. Denver, San Diego was a pretty close, fun little defensive game. So, is the NFL, is it entertaining again? Are we back?
Well, I don't know about you, but if you're willing, I'm willing to turn that frown upside down as we go into week 9 here. And I agree with you. We had a lot of competitive games. We're not saying necessarily that they're the best teams in the history of the NFL, but a lot of them playing on the same level, and that makes for some fun outcomes. And with the exception of the Patriots, who are the best team in the league, handling the Buffalo Bills, I mean, you mostly had competitive games, and you had a great game on Sunday night between two of the best teams in the NFC and the team that I think we're both ready to to jump off the Minnesota bandwagon and get on to this team's bandwagon. What do you think?
Yeah, I think we're ready to hop on the Dallas bandwagon.
And how do you feel about that? I mean, it just stepping aside from the football aspect, how do you feel? Do you feel clean doing it? Because I don't feel as dirty as I normally would.
I don't, you know what? And Dallas has been so bad the past, hell, 20 years, really. Like, yeah, they've been a playoff team, but they were never really serious. You know, they're not New England. They're not Pittsburgh. They're not even Green Bay. I don't hate Dallas anymore, I guess.
There's not a lot to hate there. And I was actively looking to hate, you know, as I sometimes do. I mean, sometimes it's good to get some negative energy out of your system and channel it towards sports because it's harmless ultimately. And so you look around at the Cowboys and yeah, you look at Dez and you wonder what Dez might do, but he's been out of the picture and now he comes back and you're happy to see him. He's a hell of a receiver and there's nothing to dislike really about a guy like Dak Prescott. So I'm with you. I'm more than happy to root for the Dallas Cowboys, and I thought I'd never say that.
Yeah, and I think Dallas, like we said, I mean, it's a veteran, you know, rookie quarterback, but that's a veteran team that's ready to win now, and they're kind of my favorite to win the NFC, I think.
I think so, too.
Right now, November 1st, I like Dallas to win the NFC.
Well, yeah, we'll talk again November 8th. Or whenever we do the next episode, but at this particular time, I'm with you, and they're built solidly where they need to be. That offensive line has been good for several years now, and it's no secret that a guy like Prescott, as talented as he is, can step in and have some success. Takes a lot of pressure off a rookie quarterback, and they've got weapons in the backfield with Zeke. They've got weapons on the perimeter. I like them to hang with just about anybody, and they're fun to watch, And to Philadelphia's credit as well, that's a solid team too that I don't mind watching either. So suddenly we've got some teams that are ready to compete, I think, that haven't been around in the past few years.
No, I think we finally have some good young quarterback play, which it feels like we haven't had in forever in the NFL. I mean, with Philadelphia, you got to feel like they're one like speed receiver away from being like a really deadly offense, but not quite there yet, but I think next year you got to think Philadelphia is a favorite to win their division, probably. Up there with Dallas, definitely a team that can make the playoffs this year.
Oh, I think so. I think they're about 1 year away as well. That's what I see when I see a team that is built on solid fundamentals, nothing too flashy or gimmicky. A defense that I really like right now. They kind of remind me of a Seattle-type defense in the making, perhaps. They look confident. They play with some swagger out there. And on the flip side, Wentz, I have to give the guy credit because I've sold him short all year long, and he's proven to be a solid passer who makes good decisions for the most part, and I think that goes a long way. So maybe next year this time, we're talking about Philadelphia making the charge, but I think at least we're looking at a wild card out of the Eagles, and I'd be fine with that.
Yeah, I think for sure. Okay, 3 years from now, who would you rather be the GM of, Dallas or Philadelphia?
Oh, man, you're putting me on the spot with that question. Yeah. I mean, there's so many. First and foremost, that means I've either got to live in Dallas or I've got to live in Philadelphia. And that's a flip of the coin. I mean, there's a lot of the dynamic. Okay, we'll stick to football. We'll stick to football right now.
Football strict, yeah.
Okay, football, strictly football. Oh, you know what? I'm going to go with Dallas right now just because they have weapons that I can see lasting a long time. I like Dak. I really like Zeke. And if they can keep that offensive line up for 3 years, I think I'd lean towards the Cowboys. But what do you think?
I think either way, you're going to be in good shape. Yeah. I'm going to lean more towards Philadelphia. Mm. I like the defense. It's a little bit younger, a little bit. I kind of like that. Like I said, you're one big play receiver away from being like a legit offensive, maybe not a juggernaut, but a big time offensive team. So, you know, there are some interesting wide receiver free agents this year. Like looking especially at Alshon Jeffrey, who could make, I can think of two teams right now Jeffrey would probably make into surefire playoff teams. One of those Philadelphia, the other's probably Tennessee.
Yeah, and he's not like a guy that you pencil in as an automatic return based on where he's at right now. In fact, he's probably going to look to test that market and will be more than willing to take a nice offer from a team elsewhere. So, hey, Philadelphia with Alshon Jeffrey, You might be looking at a Super Bowl contender if things continue to develop everywhere else on that team as well.
Yeah, and then, you know, and then if they can go maybe grab a nice little rookie running back in the draft here.
That's right.
That Philadelphia's, right. You know, looking really sharp.
Once again,
like I said, probably a year or two away from being like a real team, I'd say this team could win the Super Bowl. Like one of my top five teams that could go to the Super Bowl.
Yeah. Let's not get ahead of ourselves, of course. But if nothing else, if you're an Eagles fan right now, I think you have a lot to be excited about. And it's a different type of excitement. It's not a win now sort of thing. It's a, man, this thing could be good for several years into the future. And that's a lot more satisfying in a lot of ways.
All right. And then over on the AFC side, like I said, New England looks like the juggernaut, the favorite to win the whole thing. Mm-hmm. But there's a little team in Oakland. And probably maybe one in Denver, who did beat New England last year, who might have something to say about that. Because New England, traditionally, when New England loses in the playoffs, it's to a team with a really solid pass rush. And Denver and Oakland both have two great pass rushers, with Khalil Mack and Von Miller on their teams, respectively.
Yeah, let's never lose sight of the fact that as good as New England is, they do kind of beat up on the sisters of the poor of the AFC for half of the year. I mean, they're really not challenged in their division for the most part. Even a team like Buffalo, who is decent this year, just can never get it together. They can only beat New England when New England is down seven quarterbacks or whatever the case may be. But you're right, out of the AFC West, that's where the monsters lurk. A team like Denver, who knows if they get in if it's them or Oakland, either way, Denver comes into the playoffs with little fear and a lot of experience, and they can put the pressure on a guy like Tom Brady. And as for Oakland, I mean, I don't know about you, but these are impressive wins. I don't care if it's over to a Tampa Bay team that's not that good at all. A win is a win, and this once again, this is a bad team would have lost that game. Oakland continues to prove themselves, and they have to be excited about the future as well.
No, and I think that's you bring that up, like good teams win even when they play poorly. And Oakland did do that. Because you have like Janikowski misses a kick at regulation that he usually hits. So some weird thing. And they have the most penalties ever in an NFL game, I believe Oakland did.
That's right.
So they played really bad and still won. So that's pretty impressive. That's kind of a testament to how good Oakland is. And Denver squeaks out another win. And, you know, people forget Denver's still a pretty good football team. Even with their offensive worries.
Exactly. Denver's very good, and their losses are quality losses, I guess you would say. They're not blowing games they shouldn't. So between them and a Raiders team who, as you said, you sometimes have to win bad, and more importantly, you have to win on the road, and Oakland's 5-0 on the road. So that's the sign of a quality team. I don't care what anybody says at this point. I think we're looking at a two-horse race, and don't forget about the Kansas City Chiefs as well in the division, lingering there as they always do. You never know when that team might make a move. So
yeah, even with all of their running back worries, this team continues to kind of grind it out and get things done. And I like three teams from the West to go to the playoffs.
Yeah, well, you're right. I mean, the Chiefs, they're probably down to Priest Holmes or Christian Okoye at this point in time, but nevertheless, they find a way to, they're hanging around at 5-2. So that's a division to watch over the next 2 months here, where who knows what'll happen, but quality teams.
Like, if you're looking for games, like, people hype up bad football as defensive football. If you want to watch really good defensive football, watch an AFC West interdivision matchup, because every team, it's a pretty solid defense, even San Diego.
Yep, you're not getting a whole lot of AFC West games that are outside of 20-17 and things of that nature. I mean, these low scoring games happen for a reason, and it's not like the offenses aren't high powered. San Diego can put up points. Oakland obviously can put up points, but when they play each other, it's a slugfest in a good sort of way, not a 6-6 tie on Sunday Night Football. You know what I mean?
And you know, we mentioned Denver and Oakland, so let's, as we segue over here into our picks, this is kind of my game of the week. Sunday night, Denver-Oakland, kind of a pick'em. Denver's favored by one, but a lot of people have as kind of a pick'em. I like Oakland here.
I like Oakland in Oakland as well. I think this is the spotlight that Oakland's been looking for all year long, because they really haven't been featured. You kind of have to get through the dial, so to speak, to find Oakland most weeks, but that won't be a problem on NBC in prime time. And I look for Oakland to come out as hungry as they have been. And Denver on the other side, you know, they'll be up for it. Don't get me wrong. But Denver knows that they're playing for those December games. They just need to get in. I think Oakland's enthusiasm takes them to a touchdown victory over the Broncos. Yeah. A close game.
All right. And then we're actually going to talk about the Thursday game this week. Because might be up. Because we were up before the Thursday game last week. So, Thursday, Atlanta, Tampa Bay. Atlanta favored by 3.5. Tampa Bay beat Atlanta the first time, but maybe that was a different Falcons team. Maybe the same one. They just wasn't, you know, Mr. Hyde that day.
Well, let's take recent Thursday night football history in the classic of all classics that occurred last week. Not quite the competitive game that we assumed we would see. It wasn't the 35-34 back and forth that we had both predicted. Nevertheless, it was unbelievable. The point is, a blowout on Thursday night, I think the trend continues. I think Atlanta goes in after a victory over Green Bay, which I don't care what anybody says. Anytime you beat Green Bay, it's the best feeling in the world, and it's great for the nation, really. Because I know they call the Packers one of America's teams, quote unquote, but I don't know too many people who actually like them outside of Green Bay personally. Ooh, so you have to be.
Can I share something real quick about Packers fans?
Please do.
I was recently on a dating app, and a girl liked me, and on her profile she said, "I'm not just a Packers fan; I'm an owner." And I immediately blocked this girl because no need for that.
Well, I have a good friend who is also an owner, and he's just a very big football fan who jumped at the chance to have a piece of the pie for any team. I think you know, he obviously.
But
likes
you're
the
not
Packers
you're not really an owner. You are just a fan. You're a fan who owns a piece of paper that says you're an owner. That's what you are, girl, on dating website.
Well, yeah, I was going to say, not only that, but I mean, I'm just friends with this guy. I'm not looking to share the sheets with him anytime soon. So you've got yourself into a much different predicament on a dating site with a cheesehead. And I would, you know,
if a girl's a Packers fan, don't go on a date with her.
Don't do it. Don't do it. Yeah. And if you do, don't take her out to a restaurant because you'll be paying. Well, I'll stop there. But, take her to a buffet. Exactly. Get your money's worth with a Packers fan and do the right thing. Don't go out to any five stars because you'll be there for 6.5 hours and you'll have an empty bank account.
Speaking of overweight people, let's jump to the Midwest or stay in the Midwest. Detroit, Minnesota. Minnesota favored by 6.5. I kind of like Detroit here.
6.5 is too much. As hard as I was on Minnesota early on, I like them to show a little resilience this week and play hard against especially in Minnesota. This would be a different scenario if we were in that decrepit stadium in Detroit. But I'll go with the Vikings. I'll go with the Vikings in a close one. So six? Would you say 6.5? That's a little too much for my liking. But I'll still take the Vikings to win it on a Blair Walsh field goal. How about that?
All right. Oh.
very, very specific. Right.
Philadelphia goes to New York. New York's favored by 2.5. I like Philadelphia to win here. I think they bounce back big against a pretty bad New York team.
Yeah, it's the Giants. And so anytime they're involved, I'd be hesitant to lay much money on the line because you never know what you're going to get. They look bad, but they never die off. That being said, though, we're very high on the Eagles for a reason, and I think they're more than prepared to take out this version of the Giants right now. And word to the Eagles, I mean, all you have to do, as everyone has documented, is make a few moves at Odell Beckham and let him unwind, and then watch the rest of the team fall apart right behind it. It's an easy strategy.
Like, maybe do you bring back Riley Cooper for this game and maybe have him shout some racial stuff at Beckham?
I think Riley Eagles? Cooper... Given the timing and the climate in this country right now, I think Riley Cooper is more relevant than ever. And so, I mean, that's a brilliant idea. That word gets thrown around way too much. Things like genius, but you're a genius for that one right there. Throw him out there on the first series and see what happens.
Yeah, I think, and you know, throw him at corner. I know he's a wide receiver. Just play him at corner on Beckham. See what he says to him. Then maybe
man
Beckham's
to man
ejected.
Coverage. Man-to-man coverage, exactly.
You give Cooper a little bonus? I think a lot of teams should follow this strategy. It's Riley Cooper. Anytime you're playing Beckham Jr., bring him on. One play, shouts, you know. I mean, It's like, you know, is it the best thing to do morally? No. But this is football, and you got to win.
Exactly. Yeah, we're about winning football games. And so you get you line up Riley Cooper. You know Bill Romanowski would take $200,000 and play one game for you if you ask him. So yeah. I say you line him up there.
Yeah, I think this is a great strategy for, you know, a lot of different high-tempered guys. You just – racism. Let's bring it back. Use it to your advantage.
It's what the NFL has maybe been lacking for, you know, it's too, they're trying to clean it up too much, you know, between the flags and, you know, the over the top pandering to charities, we can all use a little racism just to keep the game honest. We're not advocating
unless you know
racism.
Who the real bad guys are, you know,
exactly.
We don't have any more real bad guys anymore.
No, they're all in the shadows now. Let's put them in the spotlight again. And
no more Greg Hardys or Ray Kreutz. Nothing. No. So
exactly. We need these guys. Yeah. Look at the ratings. We need these guys.
And speaking of murder, Dallas-Cleveland. Dallas favored by 7. Take that all day.
Dallas is
probably
going to
win by 30. Yeah, only 7.
You're telling me it's all right. Yeah, I'm going to go ahead and take Dallas by I'll say 24 when they pull some of their starters when the body's already cold by that point and they don't need to run Zeke out there and Dak. Maybe we see Kellen Moore. I think Kellen Moore has a broken ankle, but they might throw him in there anyhow just to get some rest.
Maybe you throw Romo in there and let him go ahead and get hurt. Controversy done.
It's another hell of an idea. You're on a roll, my friend.
Thank you. A team needs to hire me. I'd work well in the East, people.
Yeah.
Here's one that's kind of interesting. Pittsburgh-Baltimore, not really a line on it yet, but if Roethlisberger is in play, expect Baltimore to be favored by 3. Mm. I like Pittsburgh to win even if Roethlisberger doesn't play. Baltimore's not a very good team.
They're just not, and we're very, very high on Landry Jones here.
Yeah.
As it's well documented, and we like him more and more as the chemistry starts to come together. So I would easily take Pittsburgh there as well. Baltimore's been very unimpressive in the past few weeks, and I want nothing to do with them.
All right, and then we will jump to Monday night, Buffalo-Seattle. Seattle favored by 7.
It's way too much.
Gotta like Seattle. I think they kill Buffalo.
Well, I love your optimism. I really do. But sitting in the backyard of CenturyLink, so to speak, right now, I can't get too excited about this team. This offensive line is the worst of a series of bad offensive lines that we've had here. Russell Wilson is far from 100%, and they really have a tough time scoring. Now, Buffalo... They're a 500 team, I believe, right now, and on the road, obviously, it's a hostile environment, but there's no running game to speak of here. We have weapons on the outside, but they can't be used because Wilson has to scramble, and this is not a scrambling Russell Wilson right now. This is a guy that's very limited, so if you're right, it'll be because the defense scores points for him, and that's what nearly happened in New Orleans. In terms of Seattle winning the football game, but
you know what? You kind of make a point though. Tyrod Taylor doesn't really turn the ball over a lot, so I think I like Buffalo catching 7 actually.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, that's sad but true. I think I'd have to agree with you there. And a little angle coming at you. I like Percy Harvin to step in out of nowhere and bring one back for 6 early in the first quarter to take the crowd
really?
A little
so
bit
we're
out
saying
of the game. Fan,
that's your fantasy pickup of the week?
Possibly. And I've got some horrible teams, so I'm not opposed to dropping somebody. That's for damn sure.
Well, I mean, I've got a waiver claim for Tim Hightower right now.
Do you? Do you?
Because Ingram got benched last week. So.
That's right. Well, Tim Hightower will make or break a season, as many fantasy owners know. So I'm hopeful that you do get that one. But if
not, I'm looking for my I don't know if you remember back in 2010, I think Jerome Harrison for the Browns closed out the season. I think he got 600 yards in 4 games or something ridiculous.
So one of the best.
Looking for that again. I had him 1 year, and then I traded at the very end of the year. I somehow traded for D'Angelo Williams, and then benched Harrison, started D'Angelo Williams, and lost. And Harrison would have won immediately. So it's
well,
still, yeah.
all you can do is learn from your mistake. And so if you do pick up Hightower, and he in fact is the guy to close out the season strong on a team where, quite frankly, there are a lot of points to be had, now you know what to do down the stretch. And I'll do the same with Percy Harvin, even though after he returns this kick on Monday night that I'm talking about, I would expect him to violate some sort of policy and be cut from the team.
Or like his head just explodes from too many migraines.
Yeah, it's all possible with Percy. So you get what you can while you can, and then you let go.
All right, so as we wrap things up, what are you looking forward to the most this weekend? In the NFL or college or anything?
Normally, I would answer Jay Cutler, but they have a bye. And I really would like to see how he would follow up that masterpiece. But he'll get the well-needed rest after one game. So as far as this weekend, I can't look too much further than Alabama-LSU, to be quite honest with you. I think that game has massive implications. And based off of the college football playoff rankings, which this show has discussed already, we know that there are many scenarios in which an LSU team could possibly compete, and Alabama, they hold all the cards, as always, it seems. So I'm interested to see what goes down in that heavyweight matchup. How about yourself?
I'll be talking about this later. I'm looking forward to Auburn Vandy. I want to see Auburn. I think Vandy's a good bad team.
Yeah,
especially that defense. I want to see Auburn play, especially after the defense played so bad last week.
Well, I'll tell you this. I watched Auburn play this previous week here, and was very impressed, as I have been recently. And you were quick to turn me on to the team early on when things didn't look quite as good. One thing I would ask you about this Auburn Tigers game is, what particular channel will I be able to find Auburn Vandy on? It's got to be somewhere way up the dial.
Want to feel like it's SEC Network? Yeah. That's just a guess. Yeah.
I think
not the old Jefferson Pilot Sports, where it would have been 20 years ago.
Yeah, well, those were the days. Regardless, I thank you for that information, and I will tune in and catch a little Commodores football as they do what they do best.
You can't miss it. All right, but that's the NFL Roundup. So back to me and Dan. All right, welcome back. That was the NFL Roundup.
I love it. It's my favorite segment of the week.
Big time. But all right, as we're getting ready to go to picks here, any final kind of thoughts on the playoffs, Dan? Or we jump into this big week?
I think the number one thing to keep in perspective is that the playoff committee looks at rankings the way you should, which is, hey, if something happens one week, we'll change all four spots. We'll change everything. Like, they don't do the old crappy AP voter thing where it's like, well, if you win, you go up, and if you lose, you go down. And if everybody wins around you, then you all stay in the same spot. It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter how you win or what you do or what happens. Once we put you in a spot, it's fixed. That's not how the playoff committee does it. So, like, don't get too bent out of shape about what these rankings look like the first few weeks. Like, the one thing we've seen in the first few years of the playoff is that they've more or less gotten this right. Like, there hasn't been a year where they've really gotten it egregiously wrong. I know the Ohio State people are still pissed off about that year they didn't get in when they didn't even win their conference. But it's like
this season feels like the first season that we could have a lot of wackiness at the bottom.
Sure, that's the other. It has been a lot more straightforward the first couple of years, but. In general, I think they've earned enough of a benefit of the doubt from me that I'm gonna trust that they get this figured out by the last
week. All right, but let's look ahead to this week and let's do some pick'ems. Sure to go wrong. All right, let's kick off one I'm kind of interested in: Navy Notre Dame. Notre Dame favored by 6.5. I think I'm taking Navy here.
Yeah, I am too.
Yeah.
I think that's crazy for Notre Dame to be favored by that many when they've
even
had
be
the
favored.
Kind of lackluster season yeah. they've had. I mean, Navy isn't a rebuilding year. Navy isn't a rebuilding year, but
they do have a good. They beat Houston, so they can rise to the occasion in a big game. I mean, they are the Navy, so they should be able to rise to the occasion.
I guess people are all like, "Well, you know, their defense did kind of figure out this offense last year, but still, I mean, their defense is horrible." Plus, it's a weird neutral site game, and I in general, I always bet on Navy to handle travel better than other programs because they've made that part of their program's identity. That, like, yeah, we want to travel as much as possible. They requested, when the American Conference formed divisions, they requested to be in the West so they could do more traveling.
But let's stay in the armed forces. Air Force Army, one of my favorites. Is this the first game of the President's Cup? Is Navy or Force happened yet?
The Commander in Chief, whatever. Yes, this is the first one. I don't think Navy and Air Force have played yet.
Yeah,
they may have.
Well, regardless, getting mixed signals on this. on how this line's going. Looking about Army 1.5.
Yeah. Army, I think, is the sentimental favorite because this is the first year they've had a pulse in like a decade.
Yeah.
Whereas like Air Force, like this is, they might as well have renamed this trophy the Air Force or Navy trophy. Because either Air Force or Navy has won it for like the last 30 years.
Well, I mean, those are the two better forms of warfare at this point, right?
I don't think the Navy has been involved in anything in like since Vietnam.
What's the Gulf Persian Gulf? That was in the water.
What did they do?
I mean, the Navy has the Marines, though.
Technically. Very, very SEALs, technically.
Navy SEALs.
And they have, but like, the airplanes. The Army Rangers have been called on quite a bit more often than the Navy SEALs have in the last decade.
Okay, how about this? What were they in Top Gun?
Air Force.
Navy.
Oh, they were?
Yeah, people forget that. So
I mean, originally the Air Force was part of the Navy. People forget that, too. But I feel like the Air Force outgrew the Navy. Yeah. And has left them in the dust.
In the water.
Yeah, sure. In the water.
But I think Army leaves Air Force in the dust. I like Army here. They're back.
I just want to see Army win this game. And Army, obviously, I think they made a good hire when they hired Jeff Monken away from Georgia Southern a few years ago. He was their he was the coach at Georgia Southern when they beat Florida and then left. You know, he left instead of making the move up with the, when Georgia Southern made the move up to FBS, instead of doing that, he took the Army job.
He got drafted.
Yeah, I think he's turned. Army has spent years trying to like figure out how to ape the success Navy's had in like the Paul Johnson era, and I think they finally found a guy from the Paul Johnson coaching tree for them.
Yeah.
So I like where Army's going as a program. But you can't count out Air Force. At home.
Yeah, that's in New York. So I think we'll see, but yeah.
The one thing about Air Force that I think helps them in these Commander-in-Chief games is that they run the option, sure, but they run more of, if you're old enough to remember the old Nebraska offense where they would run the option out of a bunch of different formations, that's more of what Air Force does. They don't just line up in that flex bone formation, which, you know, I think a lot of people think about when they think about option football.
Yeah.
They try to run a bunch of different formations, and they try to go at tempo, and I think that gives them a little bit of an advantage in these games because Army knows exactly what Navy's going to run, and so does Navy. Air Force has a few more things in their bag that the other teams don't do. The other two don't do. So I'll go Air Force. I'll get off the pot and say Air Force.
Yeah. All right.
That is the most time anybody will spend talking about Army Air Force.
You think? Louisville, favored by 24, going to Boston College. Do we like them to? Can they blow out a team? Can they really show that they do belong in the top four?
Louisville's going to beat Boston College by 100. They're going to break triple digits. Yeah,
because we have seen Louisville struggle with lesser teams.
But Boston College is the dog shit.
Yeah,
and they may have gotten NC State's coach fired by beating them last week. If the rumors that I hear from my little birdie are telling me the truth,
you heard it here first. All right, let's jump to, Florida State, North Carolina State. Florida State favored by 5.5. Is that enough?
It's not. Take Florida State. NC State's got major locker room troubles. I think they're done. I don't know if they'll win another game this year.
Michigan, favored by 31. Forget about that. The over-under is sitting around 54. Michigan's going to get that by themselves. Take the over. Michigan's going to destroy Maryland.
Michigan's kind of struggled with the big spreads. I think the only big spread they've really covered is Rutgers. Like when the spread has been really high, they've kind of let up late and like, cause last week they didn't cover against Michigan State. You know, it is Maryland's like their former defensive coordinator. Last year, DJ Durkin was the defensive coordinator at Michigan. So he is a little bit more aware of how their offense works than maybe some other coaches would be. I'm going to go Michigan, but I don't feel great about it.
Yeah, I'm taking the over. 54 yeah. feels low. If it's a blowout, Michigan's going to get close to that. And if Maryland makes it close, yeah. it's going to be maybe the 30 score on both sides.
Even though I don't feel great about it, here's why I'm taking Michigan. And that is Maryland has the 125th rushing defense in America. Michigan runs the ball real good.
Yeah.
I think Maryland's going to give up a lot of yards this week.
All right. Let's jump to Pittsburgh, Miami. Miami favored by 3. Do they stop the skid against Pittsburgh?
Can Pitt get a defensive stop at any point in this game? That's the question.
Yeah.
Because their offense is going to move the ball. Matt Canada is going to make it happen. But can that defense get anything? I'm not sure. I think I'll take Miami.
I think Miami gets back to getting some wins. Here's Auburn. Favored by 26 versus Vandy.
That's too many.
Yeah, I like Vandy. Vandy's a good, bad team.
Vanderbilt has a really good defense.
Yeah. They're not going to get embarrassed.
Auburn's offense has been improving, but I'm not sure I'm ready to trust them to cover that big a spread.
Yeah. Yeah.
Against a team that is good on one side of the ball. I mean, Vanderbilt's defense is very good. Their defense is horrible. Not their defense. Their offense is like... Their offense is as bad as anything you will ever see.
So. Let's stay in the SEC. Florida by 5.5 versus Arkansas.
God, who cares? This is a game that's going to make people kill themselves. I guess Florida, because if any defense can make their offense look confident, it's Arkansas. So, I don't know. I don't feel great about it. I would take Florida here just because Arkansas is trash.
And then I got my lock of the week, Dan. Georgia Southern. Catching 27, going to Ole Miss. Southern ain't look so good, but they ain't that bad.
Oh, really?
You're not going to lose by 30 to Ole Miss.
I'm taking Ole Miss because here's why. Georgia Southern went and hired a damn coach who don't believe in the option, and their offense has cratered. Their offense is averaging a full yard per play worse this year than it did last year. I know when you hear 1 yard, it doesn't sound like a lot. But a yard for every play you run, and you're worse by a full yard per play, that's insane.
Yeah.
And they have already thrown more passes than they threw all of last year. Look how well that's going for you. They're trying to turn into a spread offense instead of sticking with the option offense they've been running, and it's just not working. So if you were giving me Georgia Southern that knows what they are and runs what they run, I would take Georgia Southern in this game, but a Georgia Southern team that don't know what Georgia Southern football is, I'll take Ole Miss.
I'm not trusting Ole Miss. 12 o'clock start time. That's 11 o'clock.
That is a danger. Yeah, you do.
That's why I'm not touching that one. That's why I'm loving Southern there, actually. Ole Miss is not good enough to beat a team by 30 at an 11 a.m. game.
The 11 a.m. is why I would stay away, but if you make me make a pick, I'm still taking Ole Miss against a.
All right, but let's jump Washington, Cal. Washington favored 16.5.
I'm taking Washington. I'm taking Washington minus anything against a mediocre Pac-12 team.
Yeah. Speaking of mediocre, Oregon catching 17 versus USC.
Do they even count as mediocre at this point?
Yeah, not really.
That's pretty a bad. Lot of points. And so because that's so many points, I'm taking Oregon because I think we're starting to forget that USC isn't very good either.
They're just kind of hot.
They've played a bunch of bad Pac-12 teams and started looking halfway decent. Oregon's offense hasn't been that bad this year. Like, their offense has been fine. So I think we're overstating how pathetic Oregon has become because their offense is still an Oregon offense. It's a good offense. Their defense is one of the 5 worst in college football. So, yeah, I expect USC to win. But 17? No. USC's defense isn't good enough to win by that many points against Oregon.
All right. Let's jump to one of our first kind of main events for Saturday. Nebraska-Ohio State. Ohio State's favored by 17.5. You gotta love Nebraska there, right?
Yeah, that's crazy. Like, how many weeks in a row do we have to see Ohio State struggle before we stop giving them the benefit of the doubt in games like this? Like, I expect them to win. Don't get me wrong. But I mean, 15 and a half points? That's stupid.
Yeah. Gotta, I'd lock up, you know, I'll lock that one up there, Dad.
Yeah, I'm locking that one up. Yeah, hit the horn.
Yeah. Hit the
We don't have access to horns anymore.
I lost the horn, people. I'm really sorry. We have this horn. Oh, I didn't load. Some great, great radio.
Yep.
Right here. All right, let's jump to our other main event. LSU, Alabama. Alabama favored by 7.5. That's a pretty reasonable spread. That kind of want to take Bama there. I think I'm going to take LSU.
I am too.
I like LSU to maybe win.
LSU at night in the bayou. Ed Orgeron going to have a voodoo priestess on the sideline. He knows the old ways.
We talked about the turnover differential with Alabama. LSU's got a really good secondary. If there's a time to see some picks from Alabama, it's going to be here.
Yep. I believe in LSU at night. I believe in the bayou. I'm going with LSU.
Taking LSU. All right. So that, I mean, could be a pretty crazy weekend here.
We could look really stupid there. One of us should have probably taken Alabama so that, like, our whole show would have, someone on the show would have credibility.
We're going hard-ed on the Alabama's going to lose at some point.
We are trolling the fuck out of it. We're hoping somebody from T-Town gets a hold of this and spreads it around. Did you hear these guys on the podcast radio? I bet. What kind of barbecue do they eat in Alabama? I'm not even. I know white. Nothing about it's Alabama white. It's as a state.
The white barbecue. It's just mayonnaise. They're really dumb. What? They don't know how to mix it. Yeah.
That's the grossest thing I've ever heard.
Which, I mean, you know what though? I don't mind a little. If you're going pork, that's mayonnaise isn't bad on like a pork sandwich.
That's gross. That's disgusting.
Hot mayonnaise. There you go.
Hot. What?
Yeah.
Little you mean spicy, warm, right?
Yeah. No, warm. Warm it up.
That's. Yeah. I mean, that'll kill you. That'll make you like that. That's how you get like food poisoning.
A little more mayonnaise and a cigarette, and like a Four Loko, the banned one.
That's how you get sick. Like when you leave the coleslaw in the picnic basket and it gets warm. The reason why is because it's got mayonnaise in it, and warm mayonnaise is disgusting.
And like some warm mayonnaise.
Really, oh my god, I'm gonna throw up.
All right, but
it took me a long time to understand mustard barbecue, but then you know it works. I'm just saying, South Carolina, it works. You take too much shit for your barbecue. Especially when there's fucking mayonnaise barbecue out here. Fucking grossing everybody out.
All right, Dan, but as we get ready to look ahead to the weekend, what are you looking forward to this week?
Let's see. I'm looking forward to see if Ohio State can survive another week. Because they've been playing with danger. I am looking forward to if Kentucky can beat Georgia. Because if so, I will never stop laughing. Like, I would just show up next week and just laugh for an hour and not say a word.
Would that be 2 years in a row, Kentucky? Did they beat Georgia last year? I want to say
that. That couldn't have happened. I refuse to believe it.
Kentucky's beaten Georgia more than you think.
more than you think is like, well, I maybe Hal Mummy beat him once.
Like, I think maybe four times in the past 15 years.
I hope so.
I may be getting Kentucky and Vandy screwed up, but they're kind of the same program.
I mean, Vandy's already beat them once.
Yeah.
So I want Kentucky to beat Georgia so bad, just to continue laughing at Georgia. And obviously, you know, LSU, Alabama, because I'm one of those guys who every year talks themselves into Alabama being overrated, and then we watch them beat everybody by 100 points, and it's like, well, okay. But, like, seriously, their schedule's falling apart, man. Like, you know, LSU, maybe they will beat them. I want them to beat them. Want to see that game.
I'm excited for kind of the return of a big-time SEC game on CBS under the lights.
Yeah, because
they really beat it.
You know, it's Vern Lundquist last season, and it's like, it's been a bad year for him to be going out on.
Yeah, but I feel like we're going to get it really strong here. Well, I guess he doesn't get the Iron Bowl this year.
Obviously, the last thing I'm looking forward to, and I'm probably looking forward to it more than anything, is I will be at the UNC-Georgia Tech game in beautiful Ooh. Chapel Hill, witnessing.
So we'll get a live report. Not a live report, but a report on the road.
A report from the field. A road report. Yeah. From I might actually record some after-game thoughts in whatever state Ooh. In whatever state of mind I will be in.
Here we go.
So, looking forward to watching my beloved Paul Johnson take on UNC.
And
Rambling Wreck from Georgia Tech. They're a hell of an engineer.
Excited for Prom Tom Vern. I think we got like a classic. I think AB. I think Saturday night's just going to be a lot of fun. Because you're going to have that. I think we're going to have some wackiness in the Pac-12 at night. It's going to be a fun after dark night college.
I believe we haven't had this is going to be our best evening we've had in college football. Well, which is the other reason why I'm happy. Which is the other reason why I'm happy. This is the week I chose to like go to a nooner because all the good games are going to be later in the evening, so I won't miss them. You know, I don't feel like I'm going to be missing anything at noon by not being able to see fucking Texas versus Texas Tech or Notre Dame versus Navy. No offense.
Well, I'm pretty hyped. Sorry, I respect the troops, Stan.
I respect the troops. I respect Paul Johnson. He's a member of the military.
And we'll be coming back next week, post-election. So we may have some thoughts on that.
Jesus.
Which, you know, which dictator
I'm saying Jesus because I'm literally praying.
Either way, America gets a fascist. And we'll find out more next week on the Power
Hour. Oh, God.
But, any fuck you of the week or anything, Dan? Do you have anything upset you?
Fuck you of the week to the ESPN halftime show on ESPNU. Even though I'm a big fan of Erica Alika Sade, I can't pronounce her names, at Steak and Stiff Arms. I've always been a big fan of hers, but, you know, they called it the Power Hour, and fuck you guys. ESPN is constantly trying to steal this from us. This is all we have, is this name. And I'm not going to abide by it.
ESPN's going to pick on us. But we're not scared of you, ESPN, so bring it.
Yeah. We know how many cable subscribers you're losing per quarter.
Yeah. We're just gaining. We're getting those subscribers. They're coming to us.
Yeah.
For free.
Halfguardandtop.com is going to take over all your market share. I predict it now.
We're calling it.
You can't prove me wrong. I'm predicting something 100 years in the future.
My fuck you of the week. Gosh, no one. Just not that angry anymore, Dan. It's really weird.
Sure, you've reached Zen.
Yes, I have reached Zen. Fuck you of the week, Ole Miss. I hate you. I don't like you, Ole Miss. And you know what? You're all a bunch of drug abusers. All of your students. But fuck you, Ole Miss. Go snort it up. Have fun in rehab. Yeah. Rehab, Miss. Someone cut me. All right, but I think that's the show. Anything you want to plug before we get out of here, Dan?
Oh, yes. At Dan MP Ford. You can find me on Twitter there.
And you can find me at Zachary T. Gilbert. A lot of fun stuff, especially with election coming up. You're going to get a lot of just fun stuff from me, especially election night.
Yeah.
Going to get a bottle of wine, liquor, everything. And we're going to be just tweet storming Tuesday night.
So drunk. So goddamn drunk. It's not coming into work people. That day after.
Which you shouldn't have to go to work. But maybe we'll get into that next week. Sure. But yeah, that's it for me. So
yeah, I mean, that, you know, it's a Tuesday night when we're recording this. It's a little early in the week to be getting drunk. But man, I just feel like knocking back a couple of cocktails and listening to Jason play that music.